Today is August 22nd, 2018, and this is episode number 476 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I just ordered one of those molecule air filters that we talked about last week.
Oh,
it's our sponsor.
That's awesome. I bet you're going to have much better air very soon.
I did, and I used that ACM coupon code and saved $35.
You saved $75.
Yeah, I did. They're not sponsoring us this week, but I'm super excited about these things.
That's very cool.
So I wanted to mention them.
That's awesome. I hope you like your new air purifier.
Yeah, so do I. So do I. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at facebook.com/group/contextmachine.
Yeah. Our Facebook page is pretty awesome.
So it is. Well, you know, we'll stick a link in there to Molecule, not as a sponsor, but just as a link.
Okay.
With the mention of that coupon code too.
That sounds great.
Yeah. That's how excited I am. I'm mentioning them and they're not paying us.
Yeah. The bill's in the mail. Anyhow. Yeah. Considering all the forest fires and increasing pollutants just in general, I think it's a good thing you ordered one of those.
Yeah, it's fires in particular. We're at ever greater risk of those. I think that air purifiers in the home are probably going to become ever more necessary. And I'm not a, I very specifically don't believe in using antibacterial soap in the home.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like I'm some sort of obsessive clean. You've met me. Right? I'm not an obsessive clean freak or anything like that. I just think that, forest fires are going to become, an ever more present part of our lives.
Yeah.
And because of that, I'm very excited about Molecule. It's Molecule with a K.
Yes. MOLEKULE.
Exactly. Coupon code ACM. So let's see here. We should also mention last week's audio. Apparently, I had some problems.
I just thought your voice was really messed up.
Well, it was, but it was electronically messed up. And we got yelled at. Who yelled at us?
I don't remember, but
let's get that name. It was Jeff. It was another Jeff. Might have been you. But I think it was another Jeff.
No, if it had been me, you would know.
Fair point. Yeah, I've seen you when you go into cop mode. anyway, Jeff yelled at me and actually told me to shut up. Listen, honestly, a fair point.
Yeah, I'm wondering if he was just using your audio quality as an excuse.
No. Well, we wrote back and forth. I don't know if you were DC'd, but anyway, he's like, I love you, Brian. Just your audio was terrible. And he's right. I hate bad audio. I hate delivering bad audio in a podcast. I hate it. And I'm so sorry for anyone who was listening and was frustrated because my voice was clipping in and out, I so apologize. We believe we have that solved. We believe that the audio problem we were experiencing this week and possibly in some other prior shows has been solved, and that this show should sound good.
I'm thinking positive. The tests we did before, before we started recording, you sound great.
Sweet. So my sincere apologies to anyone. And if you were frustrated, hopefully we will be good this time around. And I do appreciate the notes. And Jeremy, longtime listener, Jeremy had something. Let's So he talked about voting, whether or not voting was supposed to be anonymous, and how a blockchain would possibly make that unanonymous. And if it's not unanonymous and it's on the blockchain, how do you actually confirm?
That's a really good question.
Really good questions. Yeah. And, you know, we made the point when we were talking about this, we made the point that that blockchain isn't ready to solve the voting problem now. There's no existing blockchain that would just make online voting perfect now. It's more of the concept of the blockchain that could possibly take us to a place where we could do secure online voting. That was the thing.
Now, here's my concern about blockchain. Mm-hmm. I'm worried that some people are looking at blockchain as a magic fix for every problem. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. So I hope that in this case, it's not a matter of people just saying, oh, blockchain for votes, woohoo, that's going to fix everything. And that it's a technology that really can, as it evolves, be something that helps us maintain voting integrity.
The people who are blockchain experts are not saying what you just said, right? They're not saying we should do this today. Right. So that's not the thing. On our show last week, we were talking about possibilities.
Yeah. And I'm still seeing it as a possibility, something that over time can evolve into something we can use. But
could.
Yeah. But not today.
Not today. But it could. It could form the foundation of some kind of solution. So just to be clear on that. Yeah. I thought we had made that clear last week, but in case there was any doubt, we have now clarified it.
Yeah, but the question about maintaining privacy, what a great question. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Off the cuff, if you tied the voter ID, if what shows up on the publicly accessible blockchain was a number, but the keys are controlled by the person, and then the identity of the person who controls the keys is viewable by the voting machine, like the system, right? If the identity of the key holder is
Zool?
Visible to the system, people and software, and then at the same time you could also check off anyone who wants to audit the vote from outside would be able to audit the numbers, whereas the system would be able to match those numbers to people. That's one way you could do it. I say that. I am not a mathematician, and I'm not a blockchain expert. As we said last week, I know just enough to get us both in trouble. So you're welcome.
Sweet. John. Thanks. Yeah. I love it when someone takes on the heavy lifting for me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, yeah. So anyway... all right. So anyway, that's enough of that for now. We actually have three topics for today.
Holy crap.
Yeah. I think we need to hurry. Actually, we're going to run out of time.
Yeah. It turns out my schedule today is busy, busy, busy.
Yes, indeed it is. So let's jump right to Verizon. Beep, 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 beep,
beep. Thank you for the self-censoring, and now on to the next topic.
Verizon.
So what has you all hot and bothered about Verizon today? It's like there's fire coming out of your ears.
I see what you did there. I see what you did there. So Verizon, some court documents here. So before we, you know, before we get into the Jeff and Brian opinion, here's what happened. Verizon started throttling the Santa Clara Fire Department, Santa Clara County Fire Department, started throttling the data on the SIM card that one of their command and control vehicles uses for internet connectivity while you know managing a fire. And the Santa Clara County Fire Department has been involved in fighting these raging wildfires.
So they've been out putting their lives on the line, fighting these crazy fires that everyone's dealing with in California.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad you're not in the path of the fires, but holy crap. For now. For everyone else, man, stay safe, people. I'm worried about everyone of you. So they're out there fighting these fires, and Verizon throttled their bandwidth.
Yeah. Throttled their bandwidth. Throttled the bandwidth of this one, you know, essentially this one
SIM command card, center.
This one SIM card controlled internet connectivity for the entire command vehicle. So it's a vehicle. Command vehicle. Definitely.
Yeah, mobile command center.
Yeah, OES 5262 is the name of this vehicle, the designation of this vehicle.
All right. Mobile command centers are really cool. If you ever get a chance to go inside one, it's like climbing inside a spaceship.
It's funny to me that like a SIM card, it's like this giant rolling mobile phone with a little tiny slot for the SIM card. So Verizon started throttling them, and they had an unlimited plan for $37.99 a month.
Yeah, isn't it funny how unlimited doesn't mean what it used to mean?
Yeah. Yeah, unlimited. And so Verizon's like, yeah, you're going to have to upgrade to the $39.99 a month plan. $2 more a month. They're throttling them, right? In the middle of a fire. This is in the middle of an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle of an emergency, Verizon starts throttling this command vehicle.
Oh, my God. Command
and control vehicle. And they want $2. It's like. Do you remember? I want my $2. What's the John Cusack film? Early John Cusack film.
Oh,
I want my $2. Better Off Dead.
Is that it?
I want my $2. The early John Cusack. Better Off Dead. Yeah.
Oh,
Better
okay.
It's the newspaper. Little newspaper.
That's right. Okay. I've got it now. I totally remember.
But I haven't seen that film in decades, by the way, but I remember it being ridiculously funny.
Oh, it's a wonderful movie. Absolutely. Yeah, I think
I'm going to have to rewatch it. I mean, it's completely ridiculous that the kid's coming after John Cusack for his $2, mm-hmm. but it's funny. I want my $2. Anyway, so Verizon also wants its $2. And they're throttling data in the so the fire department is having to start like using personal cell phones and various other workarounds to try to you know continue to do their job while they're negotiating with Verizon and whoever the heck they're talking to at Verizon is like, yeah, okay, well, you're going to go ahead and have to talk to our, you know, our plan specialist before we can do anything about this.
So the fire department is wasting resources on talking to Verizon.
Yes, in the middle of an emergency.
Oh, my God.
$2
there is no positive PR spin that Verizon can come up with from this.
No, this is correct. So it kind of gets better. I mean, like this $2 thing just baffles me. But it turns out that the $2 actually wasn't enough either. So they ended up having to really go to a $99.99 per month.
So basically $100 a month plan.
Right. Which in the grand scheme of things, it's $40. It's $38 to $100. It's not the end of the world, but that actually just makes the throttling in the middle of an emergency all the more egregious and offensive.
Yeah, and for some people, it actually is the end of the world.
Well, and what the real issue here is, because it's a government entity, they can't, you know, like these things are actually decided through, you know, a bureaucratic process.
Right. It's not like the lieutenant in the field who's having to waste his time negotiating with Verizon can say, okay, just charge us that because I have to get the systems back online.
Right. Right. This is just, the whole thing is just so. So now we know all of this because this story from the fire department's viewpoint, including supporting emails, was included in a big lawsuit that 22 state attorneys general is bringing against the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC.
Okay.
They're suing over net neutrality. The FCC's decision to deregulate carriers and the broadband industry and to roll back net neutrality rules and protections.
Now, if this is being included in this lawsuit saying, hey, we need net neutrality reinstated, mm-hmm. My question, playing the straight man here, is why would a fire department needing to negotiate their cellular data plan during the middle of a massive forest fire need to be included in that lawsuit?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Jeff.
Oh, thanks.
Because these documents, the story, the supporting emails were all in this lawsuit, and Verizon ended up, like, after this all happened, like, in June and July. Right. It started in June and some of the emails continued into July. Verizon, but the story came out because Ars Technica found out about the addendum being added to this lawsuit against the FCC. By the way, screw you, Ajit Pai, just FYI. FCC chairman Ajit Pai was really, really keen on making carriers more profitable, not really interested in protecting consumers, so that's really cool. But anyway, Ars Technica broke the story, and they're the one who talked about these documents, the stories, the emails, and everything like that. And that happened yesterday. And Verizon ended up releasing a statement. And that statement said, should I just read it?
Yeah, go ahead and read it, please.
Actually, let's... let me first read the relevant bit from the Santa Clara County Chief Anthony Bowden.
Okay. And then you'll give me a dramatic reading of Verizon's statement. Yes. Sweet.
So, Fire Chief Anthony Bowden said, in the midst of our response, this isn't an email. This is his you know, like, version of the story.
So it's his testimony.
His testimony, yeah. In the midst of our response to the Mendocino complex fire, County Fire discovered the data connection for OES 5262 was being throttled by Verizon. Data rates had been reduced to 1/200th or less than the previous speeds. They had been getting.
So essentially unusable.
Yes, unusable. These reduced speeds severely interfered with the command vehicle's ability to function effectively. My information technology staff communicated directly with Verizon via email about the throttling, requesting it be immediately lifted for public safety purposes. Verizon representatives confirmed the throttling, but rather than restoring us to an essential data transfer speed, they indicated that County Fire would have to switch to a new data plan at more than twice the cost. They would only remove throttling after we contacted a department that handles billing and switched to the new data plan.
Oh, my God.
So that's Chief Bowden's version of the story. And Here is what Verizon had to say. Yeah, the situation has nothing to do with natural or the current proceeding in court. We made a mistake in how we communicated with our customer about the terms of its plan. Like all customers, fire departments choose service plans that are the best for them. This customer purchased a government contract plan for a high-speed Verizon data allotment at a set monthly cost. Under this plan, users get an unlimited amount of data, but speeds are reduced when they exceed their allotment under the next billing cycle. Regardless of the plan emergency responders choose, we have a practice to remove data speed restrictions when contacted in emergency situation, blah, blah, blah. We have done that many times, including for emergency personnel responding to these tragic fires. In this instance, we should have lifted the speed restriction when our customer reached out to us as a customer support manager. We are reviewing the situation. We'll fix any issues going forward. And scene.
Well played. Well played.
Yeah. So, So here, by the way, I also included in my piece, I included my own quote, my little open letter to Verizon, which was, "Dear Verizon, unusable data isn't unlimited. You lying corporate bloodsuckers, love Brian."
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up right there. So,
well, let's get back to the first line. Yeah. Which was in answer to your question.
Yeah, so what we're looking at now is a situation where because of the changes to net neutrality protections that Ajit Pai championed, we have law enforcement and in this case, well, no, let's just say first responders in the middle of crisis situations, finding themselves having to negotiate new plans
with the billing department.
Because
right. And Verizon says that their policy is not to do this and that it was a mistake. To be fair, they said this. This was a mistake. I mean, you know,
that certainly is a mistake.
It's hardly an adequate response, in my opinion. But they did call a mistake. Notice they didn't actually apologize. Either. They called it a mistake, but they didn't apologize for that mistake.
No, and while that's very cold and callous, I would also be surprised if they did, considering there's a this lawsuit that's been filed. They don't want to put in writing anything that implies fault on their part.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I'm sure that lawyers wrote this letter or edited at the very least. So the very first line, this situation is proceeding in court. Part of that statement is true. This has nothing to do with net neutrality. There's nothing about net neutrality that would have kept Verizon from throttling a quote-unquote unlimited plan that is in no way actually unlimited. Right? But the second half of it is, quite frankly, a lie, or the current proceeding in court. Because part of this lawsuit is about Ajit Pai's decision to remove a mechanism for consumers to complain about unfair practices by carriers and broadband providers.
Mm-hmm.
And his rollback of his deregulatory rollback also made it harder to sue over egregious and unfair practices. And that is part of what this lawsuit, that's all part of this lawsuit. So where Verizon says the situation has nothing to do with net neutrality, that's true. But when Verizon also says, or the current proceeding in court, that is a falsehood.
Because it's directly related to the proceedings because of the other changes that Correct. Were rolled into the net neutrality.
Correct.
Switches.
Yeah. So that really just makes, let's see, how did I put it? Let me hear. Let's see. Lying corporate bloodsuckers.
That sounds about right.
I mean, don't get me wrong. All the carriers. Actually, you know, the one carrier I like has been T-Mobile. Of course, I don't know what's going to happen to them after the merger with Sprint.
Well, it's really, they're absorbing Sprint.
Which is weird because Sprint's bigger. Are you sure about that?
No, Sprint's smaller. T-Mobile passed Sprint last year.
Oh, okay. Groovy. All right. Well, I'll let the... Yeah. Who knows what'll happen to them once... I mean, it's really cool things about T-Mobile come from Jean Laguerre. And I've got a T-Mobile account with my iPad.
Mm-hmm.
And I have my cell phone with AT&T. And AT&T has got its own bucket of, you know, craptacular corporateness. But Verizon just seems to just always be just right in the thick of doing all the bad things.
They do have a track record.
Yeah, so, I hate it. It's just wrong. Just wrong. Like, do the right thing. And that phrase seems to have, like, has no part of Verizon's corporate culture.
Yeah. And okay, so here's how this whole scenario should have played out. The fire chief or the lieutenant or the captain, whoever, calls Verizon and says, hey, we're out in the middle of these big fires and our data has been throttled to an unusable level. This is an emergency situation. And the person that they're speaking to from Verizon either says, holy crap, that's a problem. Hold on, click, click, click. It's fixed. Your data throttling is off. Or they say, holy crap, that's a problem. I don't have the ability to switch off the throttling, but I'm going to connect you immediately with a person who does. And then it gets turned off and everything's fine.
Better yet, it didn't happen in the first place.
Yes, even better.
Better yet, don't sell me an unlimited plan with 25 gigs of capacity, because that is an oxymoron. That was the case, by the way. The 25 gigs of bandwidth, and from then on, their unlimited bandwidth throttled to basically a usable level. It's not an unlimited plan.
See, there needs to be a regulation changing how these companies can use unlimited.
Body with the power to do that. Looking at you, Ajit Pai, your stupid Reese's cup. You see that stupid coffee cup he thinks?
He has a giant Reese's coffee cup, yes.
Yeah, he just looks like an idiot. He just looks... I philosophically completely disagree with almost everything this man appears to stand for.
And I find it just so amazing that as we're seeing these issues with net neutrality rollbacks impacting the government in a very clear way.
Yep. Well, yeah, impacting a government.
Or a government, yes. In this case, local government as opposed to federal.
And the fire department would be a consumer in this case. And so the fire department would have been able to complain about this with the old mechanisms that were in place. And the fire department would have been more easily able to sue for problems stemming from this egregious and unfair behavior on Verizon's part. But they can't now.
No, they can't.
Yeah. All right, that's Verizon.
All right, I'm glad you got that out of your system.
Really? Are you just meeting me? Like, didn't we establish that you knew me? So, I mean, like, do you really think this is out of my system?
I know it's not out of your system.
Okay. All right.
But I thought it made for a nice wrap up.
Let's go with that. All right. So what's this other thing? New Macs?
Yeah. So the new Mac Mini report and this is from Mark Gurman, so it's likely spot on. Yeah, so
didn't we talk about this on TDO?
We did talk about it on TDO, but there's more to talk about. So I'll give people the fast rundown. New Mac Mini supposedly coming this fall, and it's going to be redesigned, and Apple's going to be focusing on pro users with features for this new Mac Mini.
Reported.
And so that's kind of where we are. So this will be the first refresh to the Mac Mini in 4 years.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, forever.
And the previous refresh was like a very minor processor update, and that was
An LOL refresh.
Yeah, a couple years before that. So really, the last what I would consider notable refresh to the Mac Mini was in 2010.
Right.
And so here we are, and I think it's great that a new Mac Mini is reportedly coming out. Because it fits in with the business strategy that you've brought up more than once, Brian. The one crazy thing Apple can do to goose Mac sales.
One weird trick.
Yeah, release a new model.
release a new model. And, you know, they had like the slowest Mac quarter in years this last quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not surprisingly, you know, all right. So here's the thing. Here's the new thing that we're going to talk about.
Yes.
The new thing is, because we did talk about this on TDO. Was it me and John and you? Right. Mm-hmm. I remember this. I was there.
You were there. You sounded great.
And you were there and John was there. And, but the new thing is, if Apple does release a new Mac Mini, is it going to be something that then languishes for 4 years?
Well, surely with the new Macs that have been rolling out, Apple's lackluster track record with refreshes is over, right?
Yeah, well, and that's the question. Like when Apple released, so I don't know, 3 Mac Pros ago, right? We're like, yay, finally some new Mac Pros. And then 9 months later, new Mac Pros. And it's like, oh, great. But, you know, it looks like the dearth of new Mac Pro models is over. But really, Apple's got to prove it to us. And then we go, what, 14 months? 15 months? Before we got the most recent Mac Pro update.
You're talking about the MacBook Pro, aren't you?
I am talking about the MacBook Pro. Thank you very much.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure, because I was afraid that maybe I had missed a really big product release.
No, it's, remember that thing you did earlier with Facebook and YouTube?
Yeah.
Yeah. In my head, I said, my mouth hole said Mac Pro, but my brain heard MacBook Pro.
Yeah. And now everyone's like, hold on, where in the show did Jeff say that? I didn't. It was before we were recording.
Yeah. It was a thing. Sorry about that. So, as a matter of fact, okay, we'll just, like, no one heard that.
Right. Totally edited.
Totally gone.
Yep.
Totally gone. So, let's see here. Right. So, really, the question is Lucy Apple going to, you know, like, this is the time she's going to hold the football for us while we kick it. That's, you know, that's John Keith's metaphor.
I think it's a totally apt metaphor in this situation.
Credit where it's due. And give me 3 years of updates. And I'll believe that Apple's learned its lesson. Same thing for all those devices. Give me 3 years of, you know, the Mac Pro. This time actually I'm saying Mac Pro on purpose. Once the new Mac Pro comes out next year or the next year, we don't know.
I'm hoping 2019.
I'm hoping 2019. Give me 3 years of reliable updates, and I'll believe that Apple has learned its lesson with pro devices. Give me 3 years of steady MacBook Pro updates, and I'll believe that Apple has learned that lesson. Give me 3 years of iMac or I'm sorry, iMac Pro, which is now overdue. It's 15 months old.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, that's not true. It was announced 15 months ago, but
it didn't ship until December.
Didn't ship until December, yeah. So give me, you know, give me 3 years of new iMac Pro updates, and I'll believe that Apple's learned that lesson. Give me 3 years of iMac updates, and I will believe that Apple has learned its lesson. And the same thing with the Mac Mini.
All right.
And so, right now, we're at 0 years for all of those.
And here's a problem that I'm seeing. We are looking at Apple right now with the Mac product line, and we do not have trust or faith in the company to roll out new products. That's not a good sign.
Well, okay, so here's the flip side. Where else are we going to go? Are we going to go start using Windows machines like animals?
Some people do. Other people start making Hackintoshes.
Yeah, I don't want to do that either. I'm certainly not going to a Chrome crap book.
Nope. I have no interest in doing that.
I have no interest in using a Surface.
Yeah. So, I don't Apple's see Linux as a viable option for most people.
No, I mean, Linux does have, has always held a certain allure for me, but I don't have time to indulge that. I mean, I'd have a mm-hmm. Linux, but if I had more time, I have a Linux box going just for the lols, just to be cool. I mean, not to be cool, but because I would find it cool to play around with Linux, throughout the day. Mm-hmm.
I do that with Raspberry Pi because it's running Linux.
Yeah, I've got a Raspberry Pi and I don't even have it running. I mean, I just don't have time.
Yeah, I get it, but that just reinforces what we're saying. I mean, it's not a viable solution for a lot of people, or a viable alternative. So that puts us in a bind because Apple is making the only computers that really meet our needs. It would be nice if we were getting refreshes more often so we didn't feel like we were hamstrung by our computers.
Yeah. The most annoying thing about this is that Apple is turning me into a whiner. Yeah, I don't want to be a whiner, but I also am not willing to not call a spade, and in this particular case, Apple is a big spade.
All right, so here's another place where having faith in Apple, I think, is becoming an issue for people, because Apple announced the new Mac Pro at the same time as the iMac Pro. So that was, 15 months ago?
They didn't really announce. Or they said one was coming, and they gave sort of semi-preview.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. They said, hey, we have a new Mac Pro coming. We have a new iMac Pro coming.
Yeah, that was at least 15 months ago. I think it was actually, wasn't it in January or March?
I think it was March.
16 or 18 months
ago. Okay, so 19 months. So the point is, we are past a year and a half and approaching 2 years on this announcement. And I'm just at a loss wondering what Apple's having to do with the design of this computer that we have to wonder if we will see it in 2019. And yes, I know there's a lot involved in designing a computer, especially when you're doing something that's going to be as custom what Apple does, because the Mac is a custom computer. But still, I mean, we're looking at 3 years essentially from, hey, we're going to do this new computer to it might be out.
I've got an idea on that.
Okay.
If the delay, it's not system, right? It's not like, how do we make a motherboard? And it's not even, how do we design a case? Mm-hmm. What if that delay is all about architecting and making and doing the software for the move to ARM. Maybe, like, what if the new Mac Pro is never going to be an Intel device and was never going to be an Intel device?
That would be a totally valid reason, I think, for seeing this long gap between saying they're making the computer and when we actually see it.
Right. So, and when I say that, what I'm talking about is something along the lines of, you know, 32 cores or, you know, 32 processors or, you know, some sort of massively parallel kind of thing. And that requires significant engineering of macOS.
Mm-hmm.
And it will absolutely require a new version of the AX Apple chip. Mm-hmm. It's going to be doing different kinds of calculations. It, not to mention, you know, integration of, what is it called? T2 chip?
Yeah, the T2 chip.
The T2 chip and, you know, as well as whatever they're going to be doing for graphics and, you know, and then there's all the modular stuff and all those other things that Apple has said that indicate this is going to be just a completely new kind of Mac Pro. And we also have heard from separate sources that Apple is planning on starting its move to ARM for Mac in 2019 or 2020, which happens to be the same time frame as this Mac Pro is expected. That really kind of like, you know, connect those dots.
Mm-hmm. And I connect those dots and it does make the shape of an Apple logo. Mm-hmm. Although, would Apple want to jump in with the pro level machine for this brand new processor, or is it something that they would prefer to test on other Macs and then bring to this new computer?
I would argue that's such a great question. I would argue that if Apple can prove that it's good enough for pros, that everyone else is going to buy that it's good enough for consumers. So, like, by leaping the highest, Apple could make the rest of the transition easier.
Yeah, it could. But, man, that's a pretty big bet. Because if it doesn't go well, then they've lost so much trust in ARM processors running other Macs.
Well, yeah. So with that in mind, it does make sense that Apple would also have some version of this Mac Pro that is being developed in parallel,
mm-hmm.
where they can, you know, release it with an Intel processor stuck in it.
Sure.
But I what makes less sense to me is that Apple releases the new Mac Pro with Intel and then a year later moves it to ARM if Apple is moving to ARM.
That, yeah, I feel a lot more comfortable with that roadmap.
And check this out. So Apple releases sometime in 2019. So sometimes in 2019 Apple releases a new Intel based Mac Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2020 Apple releases the first MacBook with an ARM processor.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because they're starting at the other end,
mm-hmm.
and then I would bet that would mean that we would go 2 years without another update to the Mac Pro again.
Mm-hmm. I could see that,
and I don't want to see that. So what makes a lot more sense to me is if Apple starts its move, if its transition to ARM with some kind of massively parallel, at the very least massively cored Mac Pro unit based on its own, you know, special ARM processors developed for the desktop. Mm-hmm. And that's how they start the transition. And that's why there's this big, huge delay on this Mac Pro that was teased 19 months ago, 18 months ago.
Yeah. Well,
so this fits, this works. I like it.
It does. And I'm really curious to see how this plays out, because I'm not convinced Apple is going to get us back on a regular refresh cycle for Macs, at least not over the next couple of years.
Put another way, Apple may consider us to be on a regular refresh cycle.
Oh.
You know, but you know, listen, having the crappiest Mac Core in years and years and years should be a wake up call. The data pointer is right there. They release new Macs and the sales go up.
Yeah,
the data points are just right there. They make more money. They make the new Mac and they make money. No freaking way that it's costing them as much to develop these new Macs as they're making from the increased sales. It doesn't work that way. Not at Apple's level. So anyway, I know we're running out of time. Do we have time to get to a third topic?
Do you want to do it fast?
Yeah, okay. So anyway, Netflix did this thing and they got this thing and then boom.
Yeah. All right. So then I will pose to you the question. With Netflix experimenting with pulling in-app subscription out of its iOS app in some countries, is this foreshadowing for all kinds of companies doing the same and Apple losing a big chunk of App Store revenue?
Yeah, probably. If Netflix can successfully do it, other companies might. The question is, you know, what kind of hit? Netflix can take the kinds of hits and has the kind of popularity and allure that can mitigate that hit, right? People will probably go out of their way to continue to stay subscribed to Netflix, even if it's less convenient than doing so within iOS.
And this doesn't impact your ability to watch content in Netflix. It's just, where do you go when you want to pay for your annual subscription?
Right. Right. So in other words, right now, if I get a discounted iTunes card, which I do as often as I can, right, I'm essentially getting a discount on my Netflix subscription if I've subscribed through iOS.
Mm-hmm.
And that means Netflix gets less money too. Actually, that may not be the case.
No,
it's possible that 15% is coming out of Apple's cut.
Yeah, I think you are correct on that.
Well, it's one of two ways. Apple looks at revenue from an iTunes, from a discounted iTunes card, and don't forget the retailer is getting cut too.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So let's say you buy a $100 from anyone. The retailer is getting some kind of cut, somewhere between 5% and 10%, near as I can tell. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's call it 5%. That's $95. And if I'm only paying $85 for that, then that's probably somewhere closer to $80. So Apple is getting 80% of the revenue from my $100 worth of purchases.
Mm-hmm.
So that discount, it's possible that Apple is giving the 70% cut to content owners and developers from the $80 instead of the $100.
That's possible. I have an idea for how we can sort this out.
Okay.
Developers, how does that work? Do you see a difference in how much money you're getting for App Store purchases and subscriptions based on someone just paying directly or if they use a discounted iTunes or App Store gift card?
Wait a minute. You're let me see if I can wrap my head around this. You're suggesting that we ask instead of just theorizing in the ether.
I know. It's totally crazy and way out there.
Man, I'm going to have to spend some time wrapping my head around that. That is just really throwing me for a loop.
Yeah, I totally get it. But this is how I keep the adventure in our relationship.
So be that as it may, yeah, please fill us in. Wherever that percentage is coming from, at the most, a developer like Netflix is paying Apple 30% of the money that they're getting for subscriptions coming in through iOS. And it could actually even be less. But they don't want to do that. They would prefer to get all of that money. Spotify would prefer to get all that money. And especially with, you know, you got to think that Netflix is realizing that they're going to be in the same position as Spotify when Apple does its subscription service. Its video service.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Where Apple gets to keep that 30% and Netflix doesn't. Just like with Spotify, when Apple Music is selling for the price of Spotify, but Apple doesn't have to pay the 30% Apple tax because Apple gets the 30% Apple tax that it's paying to itself. Whereas Spotify doesn't, Netflix won't, Hulu won't, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, right.
Someone has to eat the discount.
Someone has to eat the discount or they have to eliminate the discount to get all the money.
Mm-hmm.
And they will absolutely see some percentage decrease in subscriptions. The question is whether or not that percentage increase is less than the overall percentage that they're giving to Apple. And that's why they're experimenting. That's why Netflix is experimenting.
Right. So they're not doing this in the United States. But I think they're in Canada. It's just a handful of countries.
Sure. So the other thing I wanted to mention about this, and I know we need to go because you got other shows to record.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I wanted to mention here, Jeff, is that this sort of rebellion is in part the result of Apple's own success. Right. You know, Apple has such a strong ecosystem and Apple does make it so easy to subscribe to these subscription services through iOS that these companies are seeing. I'm guessing these companies are saying, again, we don't check. We don't normally ask.
Because that's not how we roll.
These companies are seeing enough people subscribing because Apple makes it so easy that they're wanting to find a way to dial that back or eliminate it.
Yeah,
it's like Apple is a product of this potential rebellion is a product of Apple's own success at bringing these people customers.
And I get why everyone would want to have a bigger piece of the pie because that's business. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I think Amazon already laid the groundwork for us by pulling media purchases out of the Amazon app.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been doing fine.
Yeah, they're doing okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's Amazon. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what Netflix does now.
Yeah, it will. It will indeed. All right. On that happy note, listen, man, I know you got to go.
Yeah, I guess it's about that time. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add a question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written, good people, at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.